Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the Podbean or the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload an episode to that once a week. And also, the other option, the most efficient option, is to go into the iTunes search engine and enter Warman Kickfighting Show. Show pops right up. So, this is the one of three episodes I'm going to do in a week because I needed to make up for that one, that I missed. So, as I said before, just internet trouble in my home. I'm not sure what's going on, but you know, got a guy who's supposed to be coming out, but I had to record it, didn't get it up. So I'm back at it. And today's actually going to be a special episode. I said I was going to start doing, you know, talking about big questions that people talk about in kickboxing, but I am going to go ahead and look at a rivalry that's going down this weekend. For the fourth time, Remy Bonjasky and Melvin Manhoff are going to fight. So my goal here is simply to relive this story. I rewatched the fights this morning, and I'm going to take you guys through the journey of how this rivalry started. It's an interesting rivalry, first of all, because it's, you know, for the most part, one-sided. You know, Remy Bonjasky is up 3-0. He's won all of the bouts, but all the fights are different. They all tell different stories. They all have a different, I would say, feel to them. There are things that happen outside of them that made them better. It's really a lot of fun. So I'm going to go ahead and go through that rivalry. And I will start off with, you know, just talking about the fact that, you know, we almost always forget that Melvin Manhoff really is an MMA fighter who's got good power and good kickboxing skill and has done exceptionally well in kickboxing. Like, it should be, there are fights, there are wins that he has, and you think and you look at his career and you think, man, should this guy have even, you know, gotten this far? Should this guy have even done this well? But he's known the real, you know, his style when he lets his kickboxing offense go. He really does put together a really good Dutch kickboxing style that people kind of think when they think about Dutch kickboxing, the combinations and the low kicks. He does it really, really well. He's really strong, really powerful, lets the hands go, drops a big low kick. And though I don't recall a fight off the top of my head where he stopped a guy with low kicks, I can think of fights where he hurt people with low kicks. In MMA, there's the Robbie Lawler example for, you know, for that. It just comes to mind. But he really does have a big low kick chop. And I've always been a big fan of his, and I've always appreciated that win, lose, or draw, he really puts out a great fighting effort. And one time I was explaining it to somebody that that Melvin Manhoff has what you would call the best type of fight memory. He's the kind of guy that you could knock Melvin Manhoff off, you can knock him out. And then maybe an hour later after getting up, if you proposed a fight for him, later that night he would take the fight and be fully confident that he was going to win by KO. He's got the right mindset as far as, I went down, now I'm going to get up and get the next guy. I'm going to get up and get this guy back. Like, he doesn't shy away. And I've seen fighters who, they were killers, and then they took a stoppage, and then it stopped them from being killers. They became conservative. That doesn't happen to him at all. Win, lose, or draw, he's coming after you. And I've really, really been impressed by that his entire career. As far as Remy Bonjasky goes, you guys know how I feel about Remy. He's one of my heroes in the sport. He's one of my favorite fighters. I when I first fell in love with kickboxing, it really, I mean, it's been like 15 years now, you know, but around the 2002-2003 period of time, he had won the K1 USA Grand Prix tournament. And I don't know, I think I told you guys this story before. Go ahead and say it again. I got into kickboxing because Bob Sapp used to play for the Minnesota Vikings and for the Kansas City Chiefs, and I didn't pay attention to him because he was a bench player. But then I saw on ESPN, the magazine, it's a magazine we have here in the States that's based off of, that does stories in the way that they do on, for this major television, you know, media outlet for sports in America. And they did articles, and I read them all the time. I loved ESPN, the magazine. It had really good writing. I felt like anybody could sit down and get into the stories. I really enjoyed it. So one day, I didn't even want to stop, but there was a story that I was going to skip. But then I saw that he played for the Minnesota Vikings and the Kansas City Chiefs. My dad is from Kansas City, and I grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So I went ahead and looked at the story and about Bob Sapp and how he, you know, had a football career that didn't work out, but he became this superstar over in Japan. And it was, I mean, they really gave him like, it was like a 3-page story. I mean, they gave him his due. So me and my friends, one day I'm staying at a friend's house when I was going through training day or 2-a-days for football. And so I do practice and I go back and stay with that friend. And we didn't have YouTube how we have it now. We had Kaza Lite. We had just, you know, places where you could upload things, and I had torrent sites. So I was like, okay, I'll go ahead and focus on that. I'll go out and try to find, I mean, I'll go ahead and try to find more content on this guy. And his name came up, and me and my friends were sitting down talking. Then we go and we look up Bob Sapp. And the first fight that we see from Bob Sapp, he gets disqualified. And the second fight was Mirko Krokop. And of course, Mirko Krokop landed a big shot to the left, to the eye, with the left hand, and then Bob Sapp went down. When that happened, something clicked in me, like something changed. And I was like, I don't know what this sport is all the way, but I am all in what this is. This time, I still didn't know who Romy Brzozowski was. So my friends continued to look for videos. There was Sheer Dog had somebody making some really good highlights. There's a really good Ernesto Hoos one out there. It's go ahead and look it up. But the it is a mix between Wu-Tang Clan and Raging Against the Machine, and it's because they did a tour together. So somebody put a mix together of one of their songs, and it's just absolutely just great stuff. So I fell in love with kickboxing in that way. And then the next pay-per-view that was coming up, we all decided that we were going to get it. We were going to go order that pay-per-view. It was in August. It was in this, you know, what was that? I can't think of the date of it exactly. But I'm pretty sure I'm almost certain it was in August or July of that year. So we sit down and we watch it, and then Romy Brzozowski goes up there, and of course he gets the flying running kick over Tiger White. If you watch the documentary, you've heard this story before. But he gets that, and all of a sudden I'm like, who is this Romy Brzozowski guy? Who is this guy? He won his next fight by stoppage, and then of course he had the fight with Michael McDonald. That was really good, really entertaining. But at that moment, Remy was my guy. Remy went on to beat Bob Sapp. And the elimination round, he was winning. He scored a down because he scored a kick that hit Bob in the eye. And then Bob got himself disqualified after that. And then he went on to win the K-1 World Grand Prix. In that moment, I was the biggest Romy Brzozowski fan. But despite that, even back then, there are people who were like, well, the tournament isn't as strong. And Remy's not a real champion. And Remy doesn't have KO power like the guys before it. And the critiques that Remy got his whole career, it really is something that, if you were around kickboxing at that time, you understood fully that you were in the minority if you liked Remy Brzozowski. And it wasn't his fault. You know, he fought his style. He fought his ability. He had a great counter kick game. He had a combo to low kick game. And he understood the K-1 scoring extremely well. And some people thought that he was too conservative. Some people thought that he didn't pick it up till later in fights. Some people thought that because he didn't, you know, he was so defensive that he covered, you know, he used a really strong guard. Some people really, really thought that he wasn't being the fighter that he should have been. And that's why they loved the Badaharis and they loved the Peter Arts, as the guys who had no problem going out there and dying on their shield. That just wasn't Remy. Remy was a defensive guy who really knew how to kickbox. And the relationship that he had with kickboxing, and I guess I said minority, but what I really mean is I'd say probably about 40% of kickboxing loved him and about 60% of him either didn't like him or were impartial on him. But I really liked Remy. So you take these two athletes. You got Remy, kickboxer, combination kick guy, counter kick guy, and you've got really strong Dutch-style Melvin Manhoff. And before Remy Brzozowski became Remy Brzozowski, a billion years ago, him and Melvin Manhoff meet for the first time in February 24th in 2002. In that fight, the difference of it would really come down to the downs. As far as technique goes, and this is something that I say to everybody who watches and loves kickboxing, if you want to see a great kickboxing fight, if you want to see what the sport looks like at its highest level in terms of combination kicks and returns and exchanges, Melvin Manhoff and Remy Bonjasky 1 is a really, really good example of it. Melvin comes out there. First of all, clearly you can see the as Melvin goes out there, he's always kind of had like a little bit of a balancer, like he's always done interesting things when he's walked out to the ring or cage. And this time he comes out, he's kind of got this odd bounce to him, and then they're playing this generic music because they're not playing what's actually going on in the house. But he comes bouncing out. Clearly you can see he's smaller, and then of course they announce that he is fighting at heavyweight for the first time. They say that in the commentary, which is really important. Then comes Remy Bonjasky, much younger, Remy's body got physically bigger once he got the opportunity to actually train, full time. When I first saw him as a kickboxer, he trained three times a week. When he had his K1 world, his K1 debut on short notice against Ray Seffo, he was training three times a week. He had a friend that sponsored him, and once his friend sponsored him, that helped him to train full time, to start, putting on weight, to start doing the things that it was going to take to be a heavyweight kickboxer. But it came over time. And again, Remy was never huge, but it just came over time. In the beginning, though, he probably weighed around 215-ish, 6'4", and he gets in there with Melvin Manhoff. Round one, we get awesome kickboxing. Melvin lets the combination and low kicks go. Remy would, as soon as he absorbed a couple, he would combo and come back. He'd take a kick, he'd counter kick. Really, really good stuff. And before that flow happened, I'm trying to remember. Okay, the memory just came back. Around the 40-second mark in the fight, Remy Bonjasky lets go of a left hook. And in the left hook, you can see that Melvin was trying to close his guard up, but didn't do it fast enough. And the hook scored, and Melvin goes down for the first down of the fight. So he's like, as soon as he goes down, he punches the mat, he's upset because he knows it was a good shot, got him clean. He was trying to defend it, it was too late. So automatically, he's got a 10-8 down that he's got to work with, that he's got to try to battle back in. So then the combination flow that I was referring to earlier, it comes in response to him knowing that he's down. It's his style, but he'd really picked it up when he knew he was down. So good combination kick flow back and forth, good exchanges. I would actually say I thought that Melvin scored more, more complete striking. Even then, Remy played with the tight guard, and he would always rip the switch kick when you were punching, or he tried to time the knee in between. Remy's always done some really sneaky stuff, but sometimes he gets himself down on cards looking for it. And in this, on this situation, he fought to the best of his ability, he fought with the confidence of having the down in the back, but he still fought back when the combination kick full came up. So the argument would be, did Melvin Manhoff do enough to at least make it a 10-9 round as opposed to a 10-8 round? And I would say he did not. I would say that there was a good competitive, but a down is a down. It's usually a point dock and 10-8 first round for Remy. Round two is a round that had one of the better defensive series that I've seen in kickboxing, and like the clip by itself is something I'd like to keep. There's a period of time where Remy Bonjasky looks to push the pace, and the most interesting thing about this fight, and just in contrast to how we're feeling, if you go back and you rewatch the fight, watch the beginning of round two, and in round two, Remy closes the distance and Melvin shuffles away. And Remy closes the distance and Melvin shuffles away. Remy's looking to pressure an exchange. Melvin's the one in the pursuit. And Remy actually gets frustrated, stops in the middle of the ring, takes a deep breath like, this guy's going to, make me chase him. And it's so funny because if you look at how people look at Remy's career, you would never imagine him to be that guy. You would never in a million years imagine that he would be frustrated by somebody bailing from him. But hard hat on, went back to work. He goes in there, puts together a series where he gets Melvin cornered. He does a combination and follows it with a low kick. Melvin follows with a kick. He checks a kick and he does another combo and a low kick. And he checks another kick. He does another low kick. Like, there's a great series early in the second round where he just keeps checking and count and throwing back offense. Keeps checking and throwing back offense. It really is some awesome, awesome stuff. So That round is probably the least of the rounds. At the end of the second, you could even see Melvin slow a little bit. You could see the build of the low kicks that Remy was scoring. So I would go 10-9 for Remy in the second round, too. Round three, Melvin Manhoff comes out guns blazing. Like, he's really looking to get himself back in the fight. And when he throws, his combinations is his low kick. He's a powerful guy, and he's throwing with, you know, sudden, strong, fast twitch muscles, and he's dropping a big low kick on the end of it. And Remy would always look to counter back. Remy would counter with a body kick, or he tried to counter with a low kick, or he tried to find a punch in between Melvin's shots. A thing that Remy doesn't get enough credit for, he does try to time you inside of your offense, usually with the knee, but he tried it with his hands too. And there's a period of time where Melvin, after this offensive flow, he started to slow, and Remy really started to pick up the offensive series. Remy would go to the full clinch, which they allowed for a certain period of time in kickboxing bout. I want to say the – hold on. I'll go ahead and just check my notes. It was in – I'm trying to remember the time. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't remember the time off the top of my head. Anyways, he got into this, you know, kickboxing exchange, if you will, and got into the full clinch. They allowed him to have it for a few moments. And when he had it, I keep thinking about this over and over. I got to go check my notes. It's going to bother me if I don't. So they had a preliminary in the Netherlands. That's what it was. It was a K1 preliminary. So it wasn't one of the big ones. It's one of the small ones. And it was to earn a spot in one of the tournaments. Sorry. I had to go back to that. I was going to drive myself crazy if I didn't remember it. Remy ends up losing the next bout after that. But on this night, he gets into the clinch. They allowed it for a limited period of time. K1 usually allowed one strike. The official K1 allowed one strike. They allowed strikes for a small period of time. And he was able to get a couple of clinch knees in. But the first clinch knee he did, he threw over the shoulder. So he brought his left knee up and he brought it over the right shoulder of Melvin. And it hurt and it got him in trouble. Like, I think he was going down probably from that blow. A second knee came up as he was on his way down. But that knee, when I looked at it in replay and when I saw it originally, I always thought that it kind of hit the arm and it didn't hit anything vital. Though you can stop someone. I've seen people get stopped by getting their guard kneed and then the force drives their arm back into their head and they go down. I've seen that happen before. So definitely don't want to rule that out. But yeah, the knee came up and the first one scored big. Melvin goes down. He sat there. He had some moments where he's kind of rethinking, you know, do I want to get up? Gets up, goes right back at it. Three rounds, all three judges. I think two scores were 30-26 and one score was 30-25 and a half. Which I was like, wow, I didn't know they did it in halves for K1 events back then. But sure enough, that was the score. So that was the first time these gentlemen meet. After this, a lot of things changed before their second meeting. And by that, I mean a lot. By the time they meet the next time, Melvin Manhoff has, of course, fought all over the world in Japan, you know, fight in Japan on several occasions, fighting in their bigger tournaments, fighting, you know, mixed martial arts against some of the best names, fighting over in America in Elite FC and Strikeforce. He really did have, like, a good run. Remy Bonjasky, meantime, he emerges. He becomes the best kickboxer in the world. He wins back-to-back K1 World Grand Prix, which is something very, very rare in our game in that sport at the time. For those of you who are super new to kickboxing, and I mean super new, I won't say that new. For you, because there hasn't been a K1 World Grand Prix really in like 6 years, five, 6 years, a lot of you guys who are falling in love with the sport now don't know the weight that we had on the tournament winner. So now we have a title holder. Rico Verheerven is the heavyweight title holder. He defends the heavyweight title. We had it where you won the year. And if you win the year, we look back on your career and we say, okay, this guy won these amounts of years. This guy is considered the best. So Peter Arts, you know, won 93, 94, and 97, I want to say, for K1 World Grand Prix. I'm just trying to remember off the top of my head. So when we look at those tournaments and who he beat, people look at that era and say, he was the man. So when Remy won two back-to-back titles, he had, you know, his skeptics. People didn't like that he fought, you know, Musashi to win it all. But Musashi had really come into his own and had some great runs at that period of time. they wanted him, or excuse me, they wanted Remy to, excuse me, I shouldn't say they wanted, the kickboxing world may have wanted a different style of heavyweight champion, but Remy did give them highlights. He gave them awesome, I mean, you look at the Peter Graham KO, it's an awesome KO, it's an awesome stoppage. And you look at Ciryl Abiti, like that's an awesome stoppage. Like those are really cool KOs, and they rest in your mind after you see them. So he was given his KOs, but some people were still critical of who he beat and when he beat him. Didn't have a Jerome LeBanner on the resume at the time. Didn't have, you know, a Peter Arts on the resume at the time. So people were a little bit, you know, skeptical of him and his performances. That's just how the game is. So by the time they meet the second time, he has won a couple of K-1 World Grand Prix. Melvin has success in mixed martial arts. And then they meet. The next time they meet, it is, and I love it because it's part of my growth as both a kickboxing fan and a sportsman, but I actually had the pleasure to be at this event. It was the K-1 World Grand Prix in 2008 in Amsterdam, and Melvin Manhoff and Remy Bonjowski were going to do it again, as they say. And this took place, and it was in April 26th. God, I'm glad I checked my notes. April 26th. And the two things I remember about it, first and foremost, I remember by far, outside of Drago Gago, I would say the most memorable entrance that I've ever seen was the Melvin Manhoff entrance for this fight. So they had this great video that showed all this footage of him doing these crazy ab workouts and these power, him on the mitts, him lifting weights. He's a super strong guy. So all this video is just selling you, just hyping you up on who this guy is. Flash forward past, you know, all the selling, what they're trying to, you know, getting you hyped. There's a great song being played. It's got guitar beat. There's like, you know, in the song, it's like Melvin Manhoff is in the lyrics to the song. He comes up because at the time, it's Showtime also did the show with K1. And they used to do this thing where they brought you up on this like lift. So you're kind of sitting on almost like an elevator, if you will. And they bring you up from underground and you come up to the stage and then you walk across the platform and you get into the ring. So as he's coming up, he's got the leash on him. Mike's got the leash on him. He's hopping around. He's just getting hyped. And then, of course, him and Mike, they have their moment where Mike's just yelling at him, getting him hyped, getting him ready to go, getting him ready to destroy. And he's just all over the place, jumping, going crazy, doing his little, everybody knows the Melvin dance where he does like the hops. And he makes his way out to the, you know, this kind of hopping dance, makes his way out to the rink. The crowd is pumped. And I'm sitting there in the audience and I'm absolutely loving it. And Remy then comes out. And of course, he always had the Westerns type, you know, the slow music that was just great. It was great mood music for him. So he goes out there and I'm ready to watch the action. We come out. This, as far as total strikes are concerned, is the least amount of offensive success that Melvin Manhoff had in any of the fights, I would say. He was looking to throw his power shots early, but he didn't get into the combination kick flow that he had at all in the first one. Like, not even a little bit. So in the first fight, I felt like he was a combination kick machine. And this one, I thought that he was just looking for the power shot. He had really hyped the fight up during the week, or in the weeks leading up to it, talking about how Remy never, you know, that he felt that he won the first fight. And I would say that if you go off of total kickboxing scores, I would say that Melvin Manhoff did outscore Remy Bonjasky in the first fight as far as total kickboxing scores. But you got to take in the fact that a man went down and there were two knockdowns scored in the fight. So definitely love to Remy Bonjasky love to Remy Bonjasky as the clear winner. If you get two knockdowns in a fight, I mean, just automatically they become 30-26 rounds. So even if you win the next two rounds, you still usually can't get that fight in the cards. It's really tough to do. So shout out to Remy on that one. In this one, Remy was back to the counter-kicking game. Rarely did he open up and throw the combinations. He looked to punch in between. Most of the time, anytime Melvin charged, he would kick. And he'd cover, and he'd kick, and he'd cover. He stayed behind his guard, and he started getting work done. And then he scores flurry of offense, gets a combination going, puts a couple high kicks in there. And I believe it was, I can't remember if it was jumping knee, but I actually think it was a kick. Like a jumping type kick, and Melvin goes down for the first time. Melvin takes the count, and then they go back into an exchange. Then a second down is scored. Now, I saw this second down from several replays. When I saw it live, I actually thought that Remy's right leg, maybe it did get up to the head and score another down. Melvin got up really quick afterwards, and Remy was closing the gap, like ready to exchange, again, knowing that he had him hurt, but Remy also knew that he wasn't a real down. The ref thought it was a down. From the ref's view, after looking at a couple replays, I can see what the ref saw. He could see Remy's counter kick come up, and it looked like it caught Melvin because Melvin's body had kind of turned to the side and it went down. In actuality, the overall replays gave me enough information to tell, or showed us enough information that the kick came up and it hit Melvin in the arm, so it really didn't get him high at all. So Melvin goes down from the shot, kind of more off balance, and nothing devastating. But from the ref's view, who was on the other side of the turned Melvin, I can see how it looked like a head kick came up. So he does a count, you know, the crowd boos and whistles a little bit, and then they go back to work. Round two, more kickboxing, just Remy kind of being steady, looking for scores, scoring the low kicks. You can see that Melvin Menhoff's losing a little bit of the explosion, isn't punching, throwing power punches as much. We get through round two. At that point, it is Remy two rounds, and the first round being a 10-7 round, which is really, really tough to get back from. So Remy's up two. We go to the third round, and then we get some more life from Melvin. He's throwing some power shots. He's looking to have success, and Remy's trying, you know, playing the counter kick game and look at the combo in between. At one period of time, Remy throws a knee, and Melvin probably lands his best shot in all the fight series. Catches him kind of on the right on the side, under the ear, gets him in trouble. He bounces into the to the ropes, and the moment he bounces into the ropes, you can see that Remy was back. He played defense for a little bit, looked to counter in between, and then he put together an offensive series. And in the offensive series, there are several kicks. Body kicks a high kick, and then he scores a down, another down on Melvin. This time, Melvin does not look like he wants to get up. He's the ref has talked him into kind of returning to the fight. He looks like he's in that, I won't say talked him into it, but like Melvin's like sitting in the corner with his arms resting on the ropes. And when it happens, he talks to him. He says, "Do you want to go? Do you want to go?" He allows it to go. Remy then runs across the ring and does a flying kick and scores. I want to say, I can't remember if that's the final down. I'm pretty sure it's the final down. Scores the shot. Melvin goes down again. They call the fight off after the barrage, and it was really, really interesting. Crowd goes wild. It was a fun thing to watch because Remy, when he gets those flying kicks going, he's a dangerous guy. Like, I can name three guys off the top of my head, you know, Vernon Tiger White, Melvin Menhoff, Gokhan Saki, all guys who lost by KO to Remy Benjowski because of a flying kick. Who can say that? That is a really, really rare thing that someone's got multiple flying kick KO victories. So after the fight, Melvin gets up and he gets on the mic and he's speaking in Dutch, and I'm there with my friend. My friend Tom is the one who explains this all to me, and I'm grateful because I had no clue. And he says his tooth was knocked out and he got up and he fought anyways. And he said, "But I love you, crowd. I fight for you no matter what. Even if my tooth's knocked out of my mouth, I'm going to fight." And I just look back on that and I go, man, what a crazy dude. What an awesome, awesome dude. What an awesome guy to have in combat sports. So Remy Bonjowski is now up two. We move forward to the third bout. And the third bout happens after certain things have happened. At this period of time, Remy Bonjowski has won his third K-1 World Grand Prix. But he's won it under suspicious circumstances. Of course, we all know of the famous Badahari incident where Remy Bonjowski, it's playing real conservative, it's playing defensive, he's looking for moments. I'm there live for this one too. He scores a left hook that gets Bader in trouble, and he threw a high kick after it, and Bader went down before the high kick scored. If that high kick had scored, it would have been a different game. Would have been a different ending, and we wouldn't remember this moment as much as we remember this moment. They go and say the round ends. Clearly Remy's up 10-8. And they go out there, and Badahari comes out guns blazing. But as usual, Remy Bonjowski is true to task. He's got his guard on strong. He's trying to wait out the series. Badar then storms at Remy, does what's essentially a double leg takedown. Remy goes down. Remy's on the ground waiting to be separated. And then Badar pretty much boots, like steps on his head, like boots him. And after the fight was over with, it's one of those things where people, there's a music video that came out, and I saw like this edited. Everybody seemed to blame Remy Bonjowski for Badahari kicking him in the head. Like, I'm dead serious. Like, you look at it now, nobody looks at it, nobody remembers that moment. But I was there, I was big in the kickboxing forums, I was there live. There's a huge community of Dutch people who had gone out to the fight, so I'm hanging with them because they're the only ones speaking English to me. And it was a great atmosphere, great, one of the great fight events, and I was like, this is going to be the greatest event I've ever seen. There were stoppages and knockdowns and all the fights. I got to see Gokhan Saki in his prime, you know, on his way up to being one of the better fighters in the world. Got to see him, got to see Ruslan Karev, got to see Peter Arts, got to see, you know, all these great, great fighters, and it was so cool to be there. And all of a sudden, Rimbo Wondjowski, who had stopped both of his guys to get to that final fight, Badr Hari, who had stopped both of his guys to get to that final fight, all of a sudden we get the matchup that, you know, we want. We've got a great event, and then the foot stomp happens. And after the foot stomp happens, people thought that it wasn't. Even the commentary. Listen to the commentary. I've talked about this all in my kickboxing documentary, Shin on Shin. It's on Vimeo. Everything about it, at the culture of kickboxing at that time, a huge community of people felt like it was Remy Bunjowski's fault, that he was fine, that he could have got up, that he could have fought. It was almost like they felt it was his responsibility to save the event from what Badr Hari did. And afterwards, they've got these interviews, and, you know, people are like, hey, I would have fought. You know, if that was me, I would have fought. It was a bad foul. He's like, I would have fought for sure. So they're asking all the fighters. Peter Arts said he would have fought. Jerome Banner said he would have fought. Everybody, you know, they're just kind of making a big deal of it. So then the idea was Remy was soft and he could be bullied and he didn't want to fight. That's where it came from. Years later, we find out how bad that was. He took a really bad eye. It created a really bad eye injury, and he actually missed like a year and a half of fighting because of this eye injury. So he was legit, you know, in trouble when that happened. But no one cared in the moment. So we work our way to the third fight. And at this time, as I mentioned before, Melvin Manhoff is continuing to have fight opportunities, but this time he's getting some K1 opportunities too. Paul Swinski is a really good win for Melvin Manhoff, probably the best win of his career that nobody really pays attention to. But Melvin Manhoff and Rimbo Jaskim, just looking up the date here, I've got it here, 2009, they meet in the... I guess what would be the elimination round, and it was in September 26th of 2009, and Melvin Manhoff comes into this fight armed with what he had seen. Remy's reputation has changed a little bit. He beat Alistair Overeem earlier in the year. Alistair Overeem did this thing where he said he was faking it, where he said that he, Remy was, milking it, he could have got up. He said he was an actor, and so on. It's really one of the great videos that you're ever gonna see, where Alistair Overeem is pretty much going after Remy. He brought him this trophy, and he's put it on the stage. And he goes, "Hey, we know you're an actor." He said, "We all know that you weren't that hurt. We all know that you could have fought, and so on." And then Remy goes up there, accepts the award, and says, "Man, I think I should give you this award. Give this award back to you." He says. He was like, dude, he's like, look at your body. We all know you're in steroids. You ain't supposed to be that big. And it's just one of the great press conferences in kickboxing history. So after this is over with, it's a close fight. But Alistair Overeem is using a lot of like physical tactics that aren't legal in K1. But he's just throwing Remy on the ground. He's kind of being strong and so on. Remy then gets an offensive series with his hand, scores a down in the third round. After he gets a down, Overeem gets up. Remy wins the fight. After they shake hands, Remy goes over and gets the trophy and tries to give it over to Overeem's team, and they like throw it on the ground or something like that. But it was an interesting scene. Because of that, a few people started to change their opinion on Remy. They didn't think he had it in him. But the way that Overeem fought made people think what they saw in the fight with Badr Hari, maybe you do want to bully this guy. So when these two gentlemen meet to fight, you know, when Melvin Manhoff meet, Melvin goes in there thinking, I've been fighting MMA. I've been dealing with that type of body lock clinch. I'm going to throw Remy down every single time. I catch a kick, I'm throwing him down. And that was his game plan. Because of it, in this third fight, he never really got into an offensive flow. He threw some big shots here and there. But most of the time, he would just catch the leg and throw them down. Remy, not only did he, you know, was he a good fighter, but as I mentioned earlier, he really, really understood the K1 rules. And if fights were close, they would go 10-10, more than anything. If you had a small edge over somebody, that usually wasn't enough to win the round. You had to have a significant edge over someone. So Remy, if he was ever down in a round, he would do enough to make that round even, and then he'd go into the next. But round three, he would make it clear, because they could have two even rounds, and then you could win the third, and you'd win the fight. So really, if you could just win one round, you could win a fight in kickboxing, as long as you could make an argument to make the other rounds even. That's how they score things in K1. So Remy goes out there, finds his offense, finds his counter kick, same thing that you see in some of the other fights, in particular in the fight before this. Whenever he'd see a wide shot come, he'd play the earmuffs, he'd try to time his knee in between, or he'd block and he'd like step back and throw the left switch kick to make sure that the wide shot missed because he'd hit the body. He was really, really good at this. Like, he did it over and over and over, and he had some big offensive series. I want to say he caused a down in the third, but man, when Remy got his offense going, he looked great. We go to the scorecards. All the cards read for Remy Bonjasky. So that is three fights, and this last one took place, as I said before, in 2009. So we're not even remotely close to where we are now. Flash forward to where we are today, 2017, in October, and these gentlemen are going to do it again this weekend. What am I expecting? Well, I would say that despite the fact that he's had some losses, even had a stoppage loss to Tyrone Spong not too long ago, Remy has preserved better than Melvin Manhoff. I think Melvin Manhoff is a tough guy and is a good fighter, and I think that he's got good combination flow. But if I look at some of his last bouts, I've just seen him become more and more conservative. He's taken some bad KOs with both the boxing and with head kicks. I think that he is an exciting all-action fight. I think this is going to get huge, do huge numbers, because Melvin Manhoff is doing a great job with the promotion, and they're on Spike TV, Dutch Spike TV. I think it's going to do great numbers. I think it's going to be a great card. But I just don't see, at this stage in his career, what he's going to do to beat Remy, even though Remy's not what he used to be. So it should be good, should be fun. I'm excited for the fight. I'm glad you guys have done this history with me. And as I said before, I looked these fights up and watched them this morning. They are all on YouTube. Melvin Manhoff versus Remy Bonjasky. And I'll go ahead and bring that timeline back up for you, just so you know. So our first bout took place this way. You should be able to see it just by the visuals. The visuals should let you know the years. But I have 2002, Melvin Manhoff. It is the 24th of February. That is the first fight. The second fight takes place in Amsterdam on, hold on one second, scroll, April 26, 2008, and the last fight took place 2009 on the 26th of September. So those are the three ones. The K1 World Grand Prix Elimination Final in 2009 is when Melvin, and when they last met, and then the ones before that, the Amsterdam event, and then before that is a preliminary event. So that is your breakdown of this fight. I'm glad you guys got to do this, and this was a lot of fun for me. I think I'm going to probably sit down and do some rivalries like this every once in a while. I had 38 minutes of content just talking about three fights and the storylines that came with them. So I really hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening to my podcast. God bless everyone, and peace.